Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Sustainable Finance Podcast. My name is Paul Ellis, and I'm your host for these programs about developments in this fast-growing industry. Almost 50% of CO2 emissions in Europe are controlled by the EU Emissions Trading System. CAP2 supports clients, primarily in the financial industry, to calculate their financed carbon footprint and offers them a solution to neutralize this footprint using the emissions trading system. Andrew Eckhart, CAP2's Chief Sales Officer, is my guest in this Sustainable Finance Podcast episode. We'll explain to our followers how this sustainably reduces the amount of CO2 emissions available in the emissions trading system. Hello, Andrew, and welcome to the Sustainable Finance Podcast.
Hi, Paul. Thanks for having me.
Yes, it's good to have you here, and I've been wanting to have someone on the program for a couple of years who really understands this system and works in it every day. So we're going to jump right into the first question, if that's okay with you, and that is that many of our followers are unfamiliar with the EU emissions trading system and how it works. So what are investors in the system actually trading, and how does it function on a day-to-day basis?
Yeah, thanks, Paul. Great question. So the European Emission Trading System is essentially a cap and trade system. And what it does, essentially, the European Union overall for specific sectors at this stage, and the number of sectors are increasing, sets the total number of emission rights. So greenhouse gases in the European Union in these sectors are representing around 50% of emissions, as you stated in the beginning, can only emit a greenhouse gas when they have a right to do that. So the same way that you can only build on a piece of land if you have the property right, you can only emit a greenhouse gas if you have the right to do that. So what this does is essentially, it doesn't matter where you cap the emission, but you limit the total number of emissions. And then what people trade in the system is essentially their right to emit a greenhouse gas. So what it does is essentially, for example, if you're a steel producer, let's say, at some stage you can take an economic decision whether you change your production method to something that reduces your greenhouse gas emissions, or you buy an emission right from somebody else in the market who may or may not need that. The overall number of emissions doesn't change because the party selling it to you no longer will have the right to emit emissions. And that might be, for example, I don't know, maybe a transport company who decides, well, it's cheaper for us to buy electric vehicles to do our deliveries and reduce our carbon footprint like that. And that's basically how the system works.
Okay, good. So yeah, that's a good example to start, but let's expand that a little bit. Can you give our followers an example of how the process works in the real economy on a day-to-day basis? And let's focus our attention for this purpose on the industrial sector.
Sure. So maybe start with the fundamental aspect and working of the system. First of all, it's a system that's introduced over time. I already mentioned it's sort of rolled out into across industry sectors, and it's also it's getting tougher and tougher, so to speak. So the number of greenhouse gas emission rights is reduced over time. So basically, in line with the 2050 European Union emission targets, and based on that, companies get allocations on an annual basis. Some of that are still for free, which is a legacy, let's say, fault in the system, if you look at it from an economic perspective, but they get them and they can trade them. And more and more, they're not free allowances, but you actually have to buy them. And then once a year, you have to go in and for all the emissions that you had in your past calendar year, in the spring of the following year, you have to evidence that you have the relevant number of emission rights. If you don't have that, then you have to pay a fine of 100 euros per ton that you emitted without having a permit or a right to do that. That compares, by the way, to an 80 euro, roughly euro per ton trading price at the moment. Plus, you still have to buy the rights. So you pay more than double that you would otherwise have to pay. And then that as simple as it is, it's traded on an exchange. There's a union register that we come back to later on, which is very transparent, etc. And then basically every day, every industrial company in the in the system can take a decision on whether or not it's cheaper for them to buy additional emission rights, or just use the emission rights that they have, or sell emission rights, and under that change their economic activities. For an industrial, what does that mean? I mean, obviously this changes, for example, from an economic perspective, the marginal cost of production. So it might be that you bring down production. That might, you know, make sense from a climate protection perspective, and therefore may create economic value overall. It might be that you invest in a new production facility on that basis. It may be that, frankly, also be that you say it doesn't make sense to do this in Europe anymore and you go somewhere else. That's one of the downsides of the system. But there we have a carbon border control mechanism introduced this year. And then you trade. That's exactly as it is. There's an exchange for this stuff that in Leipzig in Germany that works like anything else. It's all the stuff goes into the union register, which is basically the central book that runs this system. And then companies can just go and buy and sell. And obviously you have trading activity with banks and traders like you would have in any other trading of rights, like the same way you have in property rights and any other right that you would see in the world.
So it sounds like the economic efficiency could be created in several different ways, depending on what sector of the economy a company is in, who they are trading within the system with, other companies in their own sector, or perhaps companies in another country, and there's different kinds of economic either efficiencies or penalties for going outside of the system within your own country. What kinds of economic efficiencies is CAP2 seeing from its clients in the financial system through the EU emissions trading system?
Yeah. So a cap and trade system as sort of is the fundamental principle of the European Union emissions trading systems. And we see more of these systems evolving, right? China is now also starting a similar system for certain sectors. It's the overall economic efficiency is baked into the system. Quite simply, because if you think of it, how do you fight climate change? You fight climate change in a scientific way by saying, this is the maximum number of greenhouse gases that should be in the atmosphere. And from that, you do to get, for example, to a 1.5 degree Paris Accord target. And what does that mean in sort of how much can we put out every year compared with, you know, natural processes of carbon absorption and all the other good stuff. And in this system where the efficiency is created is that you do not need to regulate or influence economic activity on any level below that. So it's absolutely the lightest possible touch in terms of bureaucracy. It's the lightest touch in terms of interference with economic decisions or business decisions made every day by consumers, by companies, etc. Because if you think of it, after all, what we have is that climate change comes from the fact that, economically speaking, for the last 100, 150 years, whatever, we had an externality. We used greenhouse gases and as a production factor by emitting them. And it never had a cost. Now, that cost on an economic perspective is falling onto our feet in the form of climate change. So to bring that down, we have to put a price on these greenhouse gas emissions. And that's exactly what the emissions trading system is doing on an economic level. Breaks it down directly into a price that any business in Europe can work on to take a business decision. And the same way that, you know, you can take an efficient economic decision on the fact that you have a price for meat, thus the same argument happens here in this trading system.
All right. So now, how does CAP2 use this emissions trading system to help investors improve their CO2 portfolio footprints compared to other solutions that are out there. As we know, there are a number of other solutions that are offered.
Yeah. So the way that we help companies, it's mostly investors, funds, banks, anybody who runs a portfolio. We help them on a scientific basis on calculation tools that we created ourselves, very accurate, very much based on science. First of all, we help them to understand what is the carbon footprint that we finance across any type of portfolio, be it liquid assets, stocks, bonds, but also illiquid assets, real estate, etc. What is it that we finance? And then typically the footprint, the number of tons of carbon finance that will result from this exercise is above whatever the target of that financial institution, fund manager, whatever it would be, whether it's net zero, whether it's Paris Accord 1.5. And then, as you rightly say, Paul, there is a number of traditional ways to fix these extra footprints, let's call them. Three typical ways are: you change your portfolio, so you sell Exxon and you Exxon stock, and you buy, I don't know, Microsoft because it has a lower carbon footprint. Maybe difficulty there, it doesn't change the real world, right? Somebody else will still finance Exxon, doesn't harm them. The second typical way is that sort of investor impact. So you sit down with Exxon or you sit down with a steel producer as a portfolio manager and talk to them, how could they improve their carbon footprint, which is a slow process. It might not be the best for Exxon or for a steel producer to bring down their footprint compared to somebody who might do that cheaper. That's the aspect of economic efficiency that I mentioned before. And the third aspect, or the third version of it, is very often voluntary carbon certificates. Typically what happens there is that you finance, or you find somebody who has, I don't know, a reforestation project in India, or some project that allows a steel mill in Pakistan to become more greenhouse gas efficient. But what we find there is, number one, again, it's very often not economically efficient because it might be cheaper to do that somewhere else. And secondly, these projects are extremely prone to abuse and therefore for greenwashing claims, in the sense that very often these projects, once you drill into them, they haven't happened. They haven't had the effect. It's very difficult to pre-calculate the carbon reduction of a deforestation project, whatnot. And that is stuff that makes all these three alternatives a bit tricky. What we do is we go in and buy the relevant amount of carbon emission rights in the European trading system. And we, in a nutshell, we lock them away so that they can't come out. What does that mean? In that system, it means that I'm not financing a specific project. I'm not making a specific company be more greenhouse gas efficient. But given that there is a limited number of rights to emit, what that means is that somewhere along the cost curve, somebody will say, ha, now I'm missing whatever, we bought 100 emission rights. I'm lacking 100 emission rights. I do something. I have to do something because I don't have them. There's a limited number, so I have to do something. And economically speaking, that will be the party that has the lowest marginal cost of doing this. And that's how we do it. So what it means is that the financing institution that has the overhang in carbon emission finance forces, so to speak, somebody down the ladder to decarbonize at an efficient cost. That's the nutshell of it.
Okay, so now on the CAP2 website, you refer to the Climate Protection Foundation as CAP2's safe. In other words, that's where you lock away the retire carbon certificates for your investor clients, as I understand it. Now, given the number of digital and cyber security breaches that we read about in the news on a daily and weekly basis, how confident is CAP2 that regarding the security of client records over time in the foundation?
Sure. Couple of points to that answer, Paul. First, this is like a bridge to something. The question is, why don't we retire them immediately, right? Because that's something you could do. Just like any rights, you could just basically tear it apart, throw it away, and nobody can use it anymore. We're not doing that because there is a mechanism in the European Union to make sure that emission rights do not decline in their number too quickly. That has to do essentially with industrial policy to make it manageable for industrial players, so that these do not the number of rights does not decline too quickly. If it declines too quickly, then there's a mechanism to emit additional rights to some degree. So it would be less efficient if we destroyed them, so to speak, immediately. So we put them away until such time until that mechanism has phased out. We put them away in with a partner, that's the Climate Protection Foundation, and that's extremely secure for various reasons. The first one is all these rights are traded only in the union register. That's a very transparent market, very well secured from aspects of cybersecurity, very transparent. So if you go into the internet, it's a big file, but with 2 years delay, you figure out who traded with whom at what price and what quantity, what point in time. So it's very difficult to hide that. Second point, this foundation has a sort of one-way connection to this union register. They can only buy from the union register. They cannot sell to the union register. So that's a very strong protection. They would have to basically violate the law in the first place and go against that, plus do something. They would have to introduce that sort of the second part of the lane. They cannot do that contractually without our consent. And finally, we check that. Like, we check them literally every month. We take a look at their account and see what's going on there. So it's something that is not permanent, number one. Number two, it's part of a system that is overall extremely secure in our view, plus then sort of the twists and contractual arrangements we have with the foundation itself are quite solid. And therefore, we feel that's a risk that is theoretically existing. Like, these risks just exist in this space, but something that is minimized to a very acceptable level.
Okay. And here's a question that I didn't have in our program initially, but I just realized that how does the EU emissions trading system interface with other systems outside of the EU. In other words, it could be interfacing with APAC countries or countries in the global south, or how does that work?
Yeah. I mean, there are links, for example, to non-EU markets like the United Kingdom and Switzerland. But either the Switzerland is more or less integrated, let's say, for simplicity, and the UK is something similar. Then the second point is that's a mechanism called CBAM, which is the Carbon Border Adjustment Mechanism. So it basically means sort of if you're a French steel producer and you say, "Ha, I just take my production to India or to Morocco, and then we import the steel," then you have to pay an import carbon price that basically reflects your actual carbon footprint. Because you're going for the use in the European Union. Then if you go to other systems, there is no direct link, let's say. I mean, put it this way, the ideal way to have this system to protect the planet perfectly would be to have a global market for carbon emissions. That would be the perfect world, but that's politically not something for next year, to put it mildly. but we see that more and more countries in the world, as I mentioned China, Brazil, California has a little bit something like that. Provinces in Canada have similar mechanisms that in my mind, if you wanna fight climate change, not everybody does these days, I know, but which is sad, but there you go. But if you want to fight it, then this is the most efficient tool. And then ideally it would be a global system. If it's not, then in our minds, then you would have many systems like this. And then at the end of the day, overall, it would be an input factor like, I don't know, electricity prices or any other price that you would have into building a factory in country A or B. And by the way, it brings us back to the economic efficiency. If that were the point, then that, for example, would totally support your economies or your country's push for more renewable energy, because that would bring down the overall carbon emission or greenhouse gas emission in power generation. And that in itself leaves more emission rights for any other economic activity. So that's how, again, you come back into economic efficiency very quickly on that front.
Okay, so over the long term, establishing a global marketplace for these emissions that everyone participates in, more or less. So, Andrew, thank you. Where online can the Sustainable Finance Podcast followers go to get more information about the services CAP2 provides to investors, clients, and asset managers? And how can they get in touch with you to learn more about the things that we've discussed in today's episode?
Yeah, you can absolutely follow us on LinkedIn. You can visit us on www.cap2.eu. Stay tuned. We're also going to come up with some really nice mechanisms for EUA price predictions, so the actual emission right price predictions. We have been working on an extremely powerful tool there. And then obviously, you can contact me on LinkedIn or at Andrew. Well, that's my email address. No, sorry, it's Eckhart@cap2.eu. So it's my surname at cap2.eu. So just send me an email and I'm happy to be in touch and exchange views.
Great. Well, thank you very much again, Andrew Eckhart of CAP2. And our followers can join me again next week for another episode. I'm Paul Ellis, and this is the Sustainable Finance Podcast.